is from Genesis 25. It's printed in your bulletin. Continuing our series on mothers and fathers, which is sort of a journey through the families, the first families. And in many ways, we'll find that it's not just their family, it's all of our families. And now, what I'm guessing is a familiar story for most of you. Verse 19. These are the descendants of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, sister of Laban the Aramean. Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his prayer, and his wife Rebekah conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it is to be this way, why do I live?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The elder shall serve the younger." When her time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy mantle, so they named him Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand gripping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man living in the tents. Isaac loved Esau because he was fond of game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once, when Jacob was cooking a stew, Esau came in from the field and he was famished. Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stuff, for I am famished." Therefore, he was called Edom. Jacob said, "First, sell me your birthright." Esau said, "I'm about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me?" Jacob said, "Swear it to me first." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So during one of the rotations at Vacation Bible School, I was doing the Bible story with Gary and Jack, and we were doing this activity one day where the children got to literally get up and vote and get on opposite sides of the room and face each other. And it was about the Bible story, obviously. And so, you know, they would line up. Either they would go agree with Mr. Jack or they would agree with Mr. Gary. And so they'd line up and face each other and lightly argue about who was right and who was wrong, that sort of thing. And while they were doing that, one of the kids had on a Captain America t-shirt. So it's got the shield on it with the star, the whole thing. And it just sort of reminded me of Captain America's last movie, which is called Civil War. And it had a very simple concept to it. Captain America and Iron Man are fighting. They're having a bro fight, a lover's quarrel or something like that. Anyway, they're fighting with one another because they disagree with each other about something substantial. And they just can't resolve it. And so by the end of the movie, they fight each other. And they both recruit superheroes who agree with them. And so right near the end of the film, the climax, during this big battle scene, right before they start fighting each other, they all line up in lines, glowering at each other, just, "We're going to fight you so hard," that kind of stuff. And Captain America and Team Captain America is on one side, and Team Iron Man is on the other side. So we come to this little BBS game, and I see Captain America standing on one side. I'm like, "Oh man, Civil War is about to break in here all over again." And of course, it was about trivial things. It was, you know, the stakes were pretty low at Vacation Bible School. They were voting on how best to drink from a river. You know, after the vote was over, they were like, "Oh, okay." And they all sat back down and we moved on, and no big deal. But it got me thinking about it this week, about that whole Civil War concept, about two people who are supposed to be heroes, and they are. They're both right in their own way, but who just can't seem to get along and resolve with one another, and it comes to blows. And matter of fact, it's not even the only movie recently to have that same plot. It's fairly common now. On the other side of the comic book world universe, on the DC side, you have Superman and Batman, both heroes, once again, fighting each other because they see the world a different way. They just can't seem to get along. Even in the movies that don't have, you know, people in tights fighting each other, there's the same sort of almost instinct, which is to say, we don't want our heroes to be all right, and we don't want our villains to be all bad, so our heroes are flawed and broken and usually have a beard of some sort to make them look a little gruffer, and our villains are admirable sometimes, or understandable, or relatable. We can see sort of see where they're coming from. But it made me wonder, why do we keep telling that same sort of story? Why do we keep going with this idea of people tearing at each other? And it makes sense when you consider the climate that we live in. We live in the middle of a country that would be pretty close to civil war in itself. We have two sides that are split against each other, and both sides are convinced of their own heroism. And both sides know that the other side thinks that they're right, but poor things, they don't know any better. And we never seem to bridge the gap. We have our own news sources, our own websites that we read, and our own radio stations that we listen to. And it looks like we may never get to where the children get to and sit down with one another and move along. It's just not going to happen. So that's why we make these movies, because we're wrestling with that. How are we going to get through this? And I want to say to you that this story of Jacob and Esau is that same sort of story. It's not a new phenomenon. We've been struggling with this idea for years, centuries, millennia even. I want to say that this is a duplicitous story in that it's not an easy one. Often, this can be Jacob is the good guy, therefore he's the hero and he's doing everything and whatever he does is justified. And Esau is the bad guy. He's this big hairy lummox with all of the intelligence of a hungry bull, and so he gets what he deserves because he can't think ahead or something like that. And that's a pretty gross story if you look at it that way, because then Jacob is just taking advantage of someone who is obviously not nearly intelligent enough to be in this story. So you have a clever underdog duping one over on the great big lummox. I don't think it's that way. I think this is a much better story than that, because it resembles actual real life and real families. So go back a little bit to that little mini story that we caught in there about Rebecca. She's having a terrible pregnancy apparently, and they're just fighting each other already in utero, and she finally goes to God and says, "What is going on?" I guess her obstetrician was busy or something like that. So she goes to God, and he says, "Look, there are two people in your stomach. You have twins. Congratulations, by the way. But they hate each other. And they are always going to be doing this. And eventually one is going to win over against the other one." They're twins, of course, but they couldn't be more different. Esau is this man's man. He's an outdoorsman. He's a hunter. He likes to be outside. He never ever comes home. And what's to boot? He's dad's favorite. Dad loves him, partly because dad is the lummox here who loves to eat game, and so Esau's the one to bring it home. Jacob, on the other hand, is sort of a homebody. He's always around the tents. Apparently he's a cook, which we find out a little bit later in the story. And most important part, he's mom's favorite. And we think to ourselves, how could things possibly go wrong in this family dynamic? Everything is just as it should be. I want to submit to you that Esau is more than some big oaf waiting to get one put over on him by Bugs Bunny. He's a bit more complex than that. He's a skilled hunter, which in the days before gunpowder and telescopic sighting and compound bows or even tree stands, that required a good deal of skills and a wide variety of them. He had to calculate shot trajectories on the fly in his mind. He was compiling biological profiles of species that he was stalking and hunting at all times. He was maintaining and meeting out his strength in order to save enough to be able to haul and harvest the kill after he had made it. He's no dummy. He's incredibly gifted. And he's probably very intelligent. So when he says, "I'm starving," I always thought he was exaggerating or being dramatic, but maybe he's actually starving and his brother is refusing to feed him. I don't want to make it out to make Esau the hero and Jacob the villain, because I don't think Jacob is a villain. It's not fair that since he was born, what, maybe 2 minutes later, that he gets half the inheritance that his brother would. In that time, the older brother gets twice the share of the inheritance that any other son would get. So he gets 2/3 of whatever dad has. Jacob gets 1/3. Is that fair? No. Why would? In what world is that fair? He's the underdog here. We like underdogs. He's not some villain. He's clever. He's bold. He knows how to work people. But he's not a villain. So which team would you be on? Who are you rooting for? Captain America? Iron Man? Red? Blue? Jacob? Esau? I want to say to you, by the time we get to the point of picking sides, it really doesn't matter whose side you're on, because we're already losing. If we've gotten to the point where we're lining up and glowering at each other, we've already lost. By the time we pick sides, it's over. Because it doesn't really matter who wins. If it's Jacob, if it's Esau, the same thing's going to happen either way. One of them wins, they feel great, and the other one is going to be absolutely furious and try to get back at their brother. Jacob is the one who wins this fight. Steals the birthright right out from under his nose. What choice did he have? He's starving. Later on, in another story we know, Jacob is going to steal his blessing from his brother as well, which is a big deal in those days. So not only did he steal the physical inheritance, everything that his father could give him, he stole the spiritual inheritance of the blessing as well. Esau is fuming mad, and you can understand why. Everything that was rightfully his is taken from him. And later on, by a river called Jabbok, Esau is waiting to find his brother again, and he's going to kill him. But think of it this way. If Esau had won, do you think the story would be any different? No. It would be Jacob waiting on the other side of the river, plotting something for sure. Same result. It just gets reversed back and forth. Vengeance, getting back at one another. The youth are gone, so I can tell this story safely without them getting any ideas. My youth pastor growing up had a policy, a strict pranking policy, which was this. If you prank him, he will get you back 10 times worse than anything you did to him. Okay? So whatever you did to him would be repeated unto you tenfold. So this was known. This was just a fact, and no one messed with him, except high school boys. They had to try to test their limits, right? I remember one time this got out of hand on a mission trip. So they were off someplace with no air conditioning, and there was fans in all the rooms, and everyone sweats all night. One of these guys got the great idea, said, hey, let's get some Gold Bond, which is a foot powder, and let's put some on our youth pastor's pillow. So they did. They sprinkled it all over his pillow. It's got this really pungent odor, and it's just, that would be awful to have on your pillow all night. And so they were very proud of themselves, and for like 3 days, they thought they had gotten away with it. They thought Tim didn't notice, or he didn't know who it was, and they were going to get away with it. But on the last night, I don't know where, because they were out of the country, but Tim had procured himself an industrial-sized bottle of Gold Bond. And he went, while they were sleeping at night, and he unscrewed the cap on the top, and he stood in front of one of those oscillating fans with murder in his eyes, and he just dumped it. And it, woo, everywhere, all over everything. Kids wake up coughing, and they're spewing out the spitting. Oh, it's awful, all this kind of thing. There's white powder over everything, everything. It looks like a DEA raid went bad. I mean, it's just bad, right? And so there's white powder everywhere. And he looks at them all, and they're like, what is going on? He goes, clean it up. And then he walks out of the room, and no one messed with him again for at least another 5 years. If you get him, he's going to get you back 10 times as hard. Of course, Esau wants revenge. But if Esau wins, Jacob's going to want vengeance too. And if Esau is beaten, he's going to fade, but eventually he'll come back again. And if you keep repeating this story, you can walk your way through history. because we keep acting it out all over again. When the Democrats won big back in 2008, it was no surprise that Republicans were up in arms for the next 8 years. And it's no surprise now in 2017 that the roles are reversed. The Republicans won and now Democrats are up in arms. It's the same. You can run that on repeat. 20 years ago, a little more, the USSR fell and the US won the Cold War. And then Russia laid low for a while. And 20 years later, they started consolidating power and pushing back and expanding and doing all of these things. And now they're back to see if they can get some vengeance. Is it any wonder? Is anyone surprised? Jacob, Esau, all over again. Back in the Middle Ages, the faith of Islam was expanding, and they expanded into Jerusalem, which is a holy city for them, as well as for the Jews and for the Christians. And they took over Jerusalem and those holy sites there. And the church in Europe decided this would not stand. And they sent armies to go and take back the holy cities in Jerusalem and the surrounding areas. And they marched armies there and beat back the Muslims until the Muslims raised armies of their own and came and marched on the Christians. And it went like that, back and forth for decades and for centuries. Muslim, Christian, crusade, jihad, Jacob, Esau, back and forth. It's a dark story, this one, when you pay attention to it. But think of what a better ending there could have been. I want you to imagine if when Esau came in from the field starving, if Jacob was cooking over the fire and he said, "Brother, sit down. You're eating my treat tonight, and I won't accept anything for it because you're my brother and I love you." And they eat together. And Esau is so touched by it, by his generosity and his insistence, that the next time he comes upon some big old buck, he lands it, he brings the whole thing home, and he calls everybody, the neighbors and everyone, and he says, "We're having a party today in my brother's honor because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him, and I love him so much." Imagine Isaac and Rebecca coming to that party, marveling to themselves, "How did we ever get two kids who are so good to each other, who look after one another?" And at the feast, they decide together, the brothers make an announcement, "We're going to split the inheritance down 50-50 because we recognize that we need each other. And there's no way we can make it through this world without one another at our side. And so we've decided to live together and to share things in common, working together." Imagine the celebration at that banquet table where they choose life instead of vengeance, where they can celebrate grace together. That is the story that Jesus was trying to tell thousands of years ago. He's trying to teach people, y'all need to quit this cycle of violence and vengeance and power back and forth. Don't you see it doesn't end in anything that's good? Instead, Jesus says, you need to love your enemies. And anyone who hurts you, you need to let them hurt you and move on. Because getting them back won't do a thing. He says that you need to be humble in order to be great. You don't need to be big and strong or more clever. You need to be low, like a servant. He doesn't march any wars to proclaim his kingdom. He doesn't play any political games with the power of the day. Instead, he tells stories about the upside down world of the gospel, where nothing makes sense to this world, but it makes sense in his kingdom. And he shows how silly our world can be. He talks about a banquet where all are invited and all are welcome, and the humble are the ones who are given seats of honor. Jacob says, you take what you can. Take what you can get by whatever means necessary. Jesus says, sell all of your possessions and give it to the poor. Esau says, if they hit you, you hit them back 10 times harder. Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me. The world says it's either us or them, and if you're not with us, then you're in our way. And Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and life. Life. There's a band that I like. It's one of the few contemporary Christian bands that I like because they put a lot of poetry into their lyrics. There's a song that's called Us For Them. I want to read you the last few verses of it. The singer says, "We will not fight their wars. We will not fall in line. Because if it's us or them, it's us for them." Did you hear that? It's us for them. We reject the either or. They can't define us anymore. It's us for them. Us for them. Esau is dying of hunger, and he meant food, but he's also starving for a better way to live. Jacob wanted to be first, but what he didn't realize is that he needed to be last. It's a shame they couldn't share their table together. They could have been brothers instead of enemies. Thank God there is Christ, because he invites us to his table and he gives of himself freely. He has given his own body as a very vivid example of breaking the cycle of Jacob and Esau. There is no vengeance anymore. He has taken all of it upon himself. We don't win through violence or intimidation or trickery or domination. The table shows us that we can have peace with God and with each other through sacrifice and submission and compassion and giving. There is another way. There is another world that Christ is trying to show us. There is another kingdom to be a part of. And it starts at his table. Would you join me around the table? Those who are serving, would you come and be a servant?